Welcome back to Coven. I'm Jenna.
And I'm Riley.
And we are discussing our Dream Coven roster, episode 4.
Episode 4, back again. This is our first recording back after like holiday break, and Jenna also just moved, which is exciting.
It's true.
So back. Now we are not Austin. In the same place anymore. Yes, she's in Austin. So don't hit
yeah
up
so this is gonna be scary. This is gonna be an interesting one because we've never recorded virtually
remotely,
before
virtually, so. Yeah, but this is I guess how it's going to be for the foreseeable future because we are no longer in the same place, so but it's okay, it's fine.
It's fine.
It'll be great still. It'll be great. Yeah,
should we start then with our magic moments?
Yes, this is magic the part of the show. Yeah, the magical moments, not magical. Magic moments where we share synchronicities, interesting things, like cosmic things that have happened to us in the last, well, I guess we could say in the last like few weeks, because it's been a few weeks since we've recorded. So this is just us catching up and yeah, what's a magic moment that's happened to you? Please share.
So my magic moment is really just, I mean, moving back to Austin has been so strange, and just feeling like I'm, I don't know, in a very weird transitional time. I'm here to save money living with my sister on her farm.
So fun, though.
And yeah, it's super fun and it's beautiful out here, but it has felt really weird. I was trying to find a job really quickly and I was applying to all of these barista places and nobody was really hiring. And then I randomly decided to walk into this restaurant. I didn't want to be a server. Randomly decided to ask if they were hiring. I didn't really want to work there, but I was like, whatever, nowhere else is hiring. So let me see.
I hope your boss
what
doesn't
this place is about. I don't care. And they hired me on the spot. They were like, yeah, we are. Wow. I was going to ask you if you wanted a job. Like, we are hiring. Please work here. And I was like, okay. So it's like the nicest restaurant in this little part of Austin, like this city outside of Austin where I'm living right now. So it's like, whatever, I'll make decent money. But I was definitely not excited to work there just because it's a restaurant. I hate serving. I've done it for a long time. But anyway, I went into it thinking, okay, I'm outside of Austin in Texas. Nobody here is going to be like me. This is going to be a serving job. It's going to suck, but I'm just going to make the money and then leave. But anyway, it's been about a month now of working there.
Wow, really?
I know. It's crazy.
Oh my God.
It's been about a month.
This month has gone so fast.
I feel like it's been so slow.
Really?
I feel like it's been like 5 months already. Well, I guess, does that mean it's going? No, it feels slow.
Yeah,
but
it's
anyway.
Just like felt like a lot. Anyway, go ahead. Go ahead. It just, not important.
It just, I didn't think I was going to get anything out of it, basically. But I ended up meeting the woman who does activities because it's a restaurant, but it's on a property that does like weddings and events and things.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's a beautiful property. And the lady who does the activities was talking about how they do sound baths and like yoga.
What?
Yeah. And so I was like, would you ever be interested in like incorporating astrology into things? And she was like, yeah, absolutely. And I was like, oh, interesting. So I emailed her and I might start doing like workshops at the property slash
That's awesome.
Offering like a full written astrology report for the weddings that go there as like an added service, like a wedding day astrological report.
Yeah. That's really cool. Oh, exciting.
That's my magic moment.
That.
A place that I would not have wanted to. I just randomly decided to walk into.
Yeah.
It's like everything happens for a reason, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, that's so cool. I'm so happy for you.
Thanks.
That's exciting. Cool.
What's your magic moment?
Mine's not as exciting because I have not moved recently and no big life transitions. I did start, I guess, like semi-started a new job, this month or this week, actually, during a full moon week, this full moon in Leo that we just had. So it was a crazy first week and just so much like stupid, like just chaotic little things with communication. And it was, yeah, but that's not my magic moment. Hi, Kudra. This is our co-host, Kudra. but no, my magic moment for me, there is a new, feels silly, but there's a new coffee shop that opened up like on our street, and it's like the perfect vibe of like, it's like also, well, I don't know, it's not a bookstore, I guess. It's going to be a bar also, and also have like live music, which my partner, for our listeners, is a musician as well. And so we're hoping that he can play some shows there. It'd be really cute. And also, it's just like, yeah, it's just a really nice, like, very chill vibe, which like the other coffee shops on our street and in our area are like not the same vibe at all. It's very cozy. It's like just like really well designed. Like I'm a Taurus. I love a cozy space. There's like a whole wall full of books, and like, and also the coffee's really good and the pastries are great. So it's just like this really fun, like third place, like a good third place, like the best option that we have like in our neighborhood. It's just like the perfect vibe. And we went on like the opening day, like the, or the day that they opened, whatever. And there was like an older woman, like probably like maybe 70s, who just like every single person, almost every single person that came in, she was just like, she knew who they were. And she was just like not that she had like planned these meetups like at the coffee shops, and she just like ran into her friends and was just for hours like cycling through these people and just like catching up with them. And it was like, I was like, this is like why we moved to this neighborhood, like where we are in Brooklyn, and like just the community. And like, it was just really cool to see that, like just face to face. Like, yeah, it was really sweet. So
yeah,
it was just like, yeah, this is exactly like the place that we needed. Just a good, cozy, like meetup little like working spot. I like sat there that day and just like wrote, and it was really nice. So
I love that.
We're excited for our new third place.
Yeah, finally it starts to feel a little bit more like home, probably.
Yeah, that too. I think we're settling into like staying here, staying in this neighborhood, staying in our apartment, which like if any of our listeners live in New York, it's always like a hunt to like find the right space for you that feels like comfortable, because this city is so insane to live in. So finding a place to make it feel like home is like, it's a conscious effort that you have to do, and a lot of like thought that gets put into it, I feel like.
Yeah.
So have that, and it's great.
Good. It is so important. I feel like coffee shops are so crucial to me, I feel like, in a neighborhood or any place that I'm living, to find a place that I can go and just, like a third place, I guess. I know there's a lot of dialogue around those recently, but.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like what?
I don't know. I feel like I've just, no, I just feel like I've recently heard about the idea of like a third place, and I've really.
Yeah, me too. I feel like since like COVID, like people want like places that they can go that doesn't have to do with home, doesn't have to do with work. It's just like kind of a neutral meeting spot that feels like
to be around other people too.
Yeah. Be like in your community and stuff. Yeah. So
a solid coffee shop is so crucial.
It's the best option.
Goes a long way.
Yeah, for real. So we're very glad to have this new place. Everyone that works there is really nice. Like, it's just good vibes all around.
Good.
Yeah. Well, listeners, please send us your magic moments. We want to hear about.
We'd love to hear from you.
Yes. We want to hear about the, I don't know, crazy coincidences, the synchronicities, your crazy, scary, accurate horoscopes. Any and all, please send us our way at.
And we want to share them. We want to share them if you send them to us. Yes, our email is covenpod.
That is why we want them.
covenpod333@gmail.com.
So please send those. We want to see you in our inbox.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, let's get into it. Yeah.
Yeah, the main part of the show. So I'm going to be telling a story of someone today, and as usual, we're going to start off with a blind birth chart interpretation. So I have sent Jenna the birth chart of this person that I'm going to cover, and Jenna has no idea who I'm covering or anything about them, but she's going to tell me, based off of the birth chart, maybe what kind of person this person might be, what maybe their life was like. So go ahead. I guess I can also read off like their placements for our listeners. Oh, wait, I'm going to share the screen.
Yeah.
New virtual hack unlocked. That so is... our listeners or watchers, viewers, that's weird. Our viewers can see with us, but
That is something nice about the virtual recording is that we can.
That's true. So
show it.
So here we go. This is our person here. If you want to tell us your highlights that you view, and then also, well, I guess for people who aren't watching this, if you're not watching on YouTube and you're listening on your podcast platform of choice,
Virginia. Like, what's interesting.
Don't look at that.
1931.
Okay. So, don't look at that.
Well, I don't know. I didn't see that. I thought you were doing somebody, and I must be wrong because I don't think this is the person I thought you were doing.
Who do you think I was doing? Should I say, or you can guess later, I guess. Or you can guess now.
I thought you were doing Sylvia Plath.
No, I'm not doing Sylvia Plath. But also, I might mention this at the end because it kind of has to do with my little closing part. But I don't know that I want to cover her because I want to cover more like lesser known people. Anyway.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. I thought. Okay. So I don't know who this is at all.
So you really don't know. And I told you, I texted you earlier this week. I was like, you're going to love this person that I'm covering. Sick.
Okay.
Continue. So anyway, for the people who are listening and cannot see this on our video version, this person has their sun in Aries, their moon in Aries. They are maybe a Virgo rising, but we don't have an exact birth chart, or we don't have an exact birth time, so that might not be accurate. And I don't know. I feel like maybe that's probably not accurate, just knowing what I know about this person. But anyway, we're just going to go with it. Virgo rising. Mercury in Taurus, Venus in Pisces, which is the same as me. Mars in Leo, Jupiter in Cancer, Saturn in Capricorn, Uranus in Aries, Neptune in Virgo, Pluto in Cancer, North Node in Aries, Chiron in Taurus, and Midheaven in Gemini. And we're going to go back up here, and you can tell me what you think. Also, shout out AstroCharts. Thanks, AstroCharts, for free charts.
Amazing. That's cool. So she has a lot of the same placements as my mom.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My mom is an Aries sun with an Aries north node and a Pisces Venus.
Okay.
And she's a Pisces rising, so opposite Virgo rising.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
So basing this just off of my mother, it would be somebody who is – I mean, the Aries sun is always going to be a lot of independence, especially the Aries moon too. Shout out Aries moon, my sister moons. Independent, Aries moon. Individualistic, not super – like, not really needing anybody else's approval for anything, just kind of wanting to do their own thing. In the eighth house, though, that is going to add an element of kind of darkness there, a little bit of secrecy, a little bit of more introversion, rather than a lot of the time Aries can be very extroverted.
Yeah, that's
if they have. Yeah,
that
they have
in your head. Interesting.
Interesting. If they have a lot of, their Aries placements in their eighth house, it's going to kind of water it down, quite literally. Yeah, Aries in the eighth house is just like, it is a lot of intensity. A lot of intensity, a lot of like darkness, a lot of like hidden, like secret things about this person, maybe a little bit more introverted. But then that being said, their Mars, because Aries is ruled by Mars. So with all those Aries placements, you want to look at Mars too. And their Mars is in Leo. So it's still very expressive. So even though there may be very like hidden and introverted with their intensity, they also have a like passion and motivation to express themselves. So this feels like an artist chart. Somebody who is connected with their inner child, keen on expression and external presentation, because they don't have a lot on the lower half of their chart. So it's like somebody whose energies are often directed externally, or they are often like in the public a lot. A Gemini midheaven, I mean, is usually paired with people who are writers or social networkers in some way. The Pisces Venus, that's always just, I mean, Pisces Venus is beautiful. Obviously, you have a Pisces Venus. And my mommy has a Pisces Venus. And actually, like, everybody in my family randomly has a Pisces Venus, except
that's
for
me. That's so weird.
It's super strange.
Except for me.
And my my ex had a Pisces Venus, too.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like Pisces Venus are just, like, they're just, like, unconditionally loving a lot of the time. And it's a really beautiful placement to have, because Venus is exalted in Pisces. Also a very artistic placement.
Yeah. I think this person is like a dreamer for sure. Like has that quality, those kind of like Pisces qualities. What do you think about the North Node in Aries? Like, what does that?
Oh yeah. I was going to say with that, because that's also something that my mother has, the North Node Aries, South Node Libra.
We've talked about
that in her life has manifested in, she always just wanted to be a housewife and like a mother. And she never wanted to like be the person in charge doing all the things. And time again, she was put in situations where she had to become independent, and she had to be the one in charge taking care of things. Yeah, the lesson in her life has been to find her independence and understand how capable she is and how powerful she is on her own and not needing somebody else to take care of her. So if that is similar with this person, I'm assuming it has some of those themes where maybe they didn't necessarily always want to be super powerful and independent and individualistic, but they always found themselves in situations that encouraged it.
Yeah. I think a good amount of what you said is like pretty on the money for this person. Why do I get so nervous before I tell you who it is? Like revealing it, I get nervous. I'm like nervous, excited. Okay.
I get it. I was the same way. I am the same way with mine.
Yeah. Okay. So this week, are we ready for to get to this part? No? Okay. So this week I am covering professor, writer, activist, and lesbian feminist icon, Dr. Sally Miller Gearhart. Yes, we are going to love this. I'm so excited. I had considered making this one of my magic moments, but I didn't, obviously I didn't want to give away who I was going to be covering. Because the I really just kind of stumbled across this person in a way. So I like religiously listened to My Favorite Murder. I've been a fan since for like 7 years. It's like the podcast that got me into podcasts. I love that podcast. Shout out to My Favorite Murder. Yes, so good. But they recently covered the story of Harvey Milk, which, do you know anything about Harvey Milk? Okay. So this is just like California history. So, and I'm from California, so I feel like maybe at some point in school I learned about him or something. I don't know. But so he was like the first openly gay politician or person elected to like public office in California history. And maybe like one of the first in the country, because this was like in the 70s, most of this. And he, I don't want to give it away. Okay. I don't want to give away too much of the story because I'm going to get into it, obviously. But so they just covered Harvey Milk, his murder in, because it's a murder podcast, in episode 409. And they lightly mentioned Sally Gearhart in the intro of episode 411. It's like one of the more recent episodes. And without giving too much away, she just stuck in my brain after listening to that. And I started looking into her story and I was like, this is like such the perfect person. And they literally mentioned, like, they just said her name. It was in like a, their like corrections corner where they like are like, oh wait, we messed up this one piece of information. It wasn't this person that was like his debate partner. It was actually this person. And then they said something about like, she seemed really cool, whatever, like look into her life if you're interested. And that just, I just like, and I don't usually do that when I like listen, like if people say like, oh, look this person up for whatever, I don't know. But I was just like, something about that is like sticking in my brain. So I started looking into her story. And I'm like, this is definitely someone that we should be inviting to our coven. So let's get into it.
Oh, I'm excited to hear it.
Okay. So I got a good chunk of my information from a lecture that I watched on YouTube from 2022 by Deborah Craig, who is a professor at San Francisco State University, which is connected to Sally, as we will find out shortly. She also...
Man, you know what? Sorry to cut you off, but I feel like this could be another magic moment. Ever since I've been looking at moving to San Francisco, the past 2 weeks, I have been learning about so many people who like started in San Francisco and like so many connections to San Francisco. Anyway, side note, continue.
And I'm like, so like I'm from Northern California. I just, San Francisco was like, I would go there when I was growing up, when I was young, and like, I'm from like a rural town in Northern California, middle of nowhere. It was like the first city I ever went to. And like, it was just like opened my eyes to just what the world could be and like what was out there. And it was like, it was such an exciting and like, yeah, it was just such an exciting place for me as a kid. And I've always felt really connected to it. I'm like, I am always like, I don't know how I haven't ever lived there because I always wanted to as a kid and somehow I'm in New York, but
come live with me. But
I know. I love San Francisco. And so, and that's a huge part of Sally's story and like where she really, I don't want to give too much away. So I'm going to stop myself before I get carried away. But, anyway, Deborah Craig is the, also a film director, and she directed this documentary about Sally that will be coming out later this year, 2024. So keep your eyes peeled for that, 'cause it looks really good. She put like a, some of the trailer and some clips from it in this lecture that I listened to. That was just like an online lecture about Sally and about her life. So I got a lot of good information from that.
That's exciting.
And as always, all of our sources will be linked in the show notes. So you can go find the link to that lecture if you want to listen to it. It's really good. So let's start with the beginning. Sally was born in rural Appalachian Virginia on April 15th, 1931, which I actually, So at the beginning of the show, when I showed Jenna the birth chart, I was like, oh, she has the same birthday as my great grandma, who is like such a fiery, like amazing woman and is still with us today. And I love her to death. She's like so important to me. And I was like, I think maybe, because she was born in 1931. So I was like, I think maybe she was born the same year as my grandma too. And I just fact checked that. And my mom said that she was born, my great grandma was born in 1929. So in 1929. Yeah. So, but I was like, maybe they have like the same birth chart, but they don't. But close. They have the same birthday. Anyway, tax day. So she was born in
Appalachian
Virginia.
Girl.
Yeah. And like also like I also lived in like rural Appalachian, like Western Kentucky. Western? Eastern Kentucky. My bad. Sorry, Eastern
You
Kentucky.
Lived?
Yeah, I did. I did an internship out there for like 4 months. Yeah, before I moved to Nashville, this was when I was still in like healthcare stuff. I lived in Appalachian and I lived in Appalachia in Eastern Kentucky.
How
and
did I not know this?
I don't know. I'm surprised that you didn't know that. But so then I'm looking into her and she's like Appalachia and San Francisco, and then she moves. I'm giving away too many things. But so whoops. Just like everywhere that she's been, and then I'm getting way too ahead of myself. Anyway, I just am connected to almost every single place that she's lived, and you also are connected to a lot of places that she's lived. And it's just so interesting, like when I love like when we like yeah, when we start looking into these people and I'm like, oh my God, like I lived there, or like I don't know, just the random little connections. And I'm like, this is maybe why I felt connected to this person. And before I even knew anything about them. And then I start looking into them, I'm like, oh my God, so cool. Just like
There's
random
always,
things like that that resonate.
Always so many connections that blow my mind in looking these people up.
Yeah, and like it's weird because they're just like kind of random people that we.
But nothing's ever random.
So anyway, sorry, I've gotten like one sentence into this. So that's where she was born. That's when she was born. And her parents, her dad was a dentist. Her mom was a secretary. And they got divorced when she was young, in a time when divorce was still uncommon and scandalous. And for whatever reason, after her parents got divorced, she moved in and lived with, for the majority of her childhood, with her maternal grandmother, who ran a boarding house for women out in Virginia. So other than the fact that she was raised in this boarding house, her upbringing was pretty typical for a woman in like the rural South in the 30s and 40s. Like she was raised Christian, she grew up in the church, and also like that knowledge that she had of the Bible and like being in that kind of culture and everything stuck with her throughout her life and aided her in these debates that she would get into like when later in her like political and public life that we'll get into. Against like these conservative people who would like twist the Bible and weaponize it and use it to further their own agendas, as people do. But
there's nothing more
on that later.
Satisfying nothing more satisfying than when somebody knows the Bible really well and is able to like combat
just call people like, out on their shit.
When people don't expect them to know the Bible and they're like quoting the Bible, and then somebody can be like, well, actually, it says this in the Bible, so
says this,
sit down.
Actually, this is what it means. So she's a queen for that. So, and like theology and religion always remained a big part of her life, and she later served on the Council on Religion and the Homosexual while she lived in San Francisco, which sought to connect gay rights activists with church leaders in the area to help them understand gay rights issues better and bring them together to advocate, which is just like really, just really fucking cool.
Wait, I love this because she has so many placements similar to my mom's, and my mom has low-key been a huge activist for LGBTQ things in the Mormon church. My mother's LDS and...
Yeah.
Listeners, if you don't
know. Wait, that's so cool.
And she's amazing. Yeah. And my brother is gay and I'm obviously like queer, bisexual, whatever, umbrella.
Whatever.
And she has just been so open-minded and loving and accepting, and she's always speaking out about these things. So that's a fun connection there too.
Yeah, that's so true. I didn't even think about that with you saying that like she was so much like your mom, and that makes so much sense. I love that. Yeah. So just, super cool. Spirituality always remained important to her even after she left the church. And apparently she loved to say, this is like a direct quote, "I'm looking forward to the death of the church so we can start practicing the gospel."
Oh, that's a good one.
Just all the twisted shit in churches. Yeah. Wow, this is becoming a theme in the people that I bring to our coven, isn't it? Anyway, so she was raised in this environment, in this boarding house with her maternal grandmother. So just a lot of like, just like close female energy around her all the time. She was surrounded by women, and according to her website, which has a lot of really good information too, some of this information even like firsthand from Sally herself, like when she was still alive and would write things on her website. It's super cute. So anyway, living in this boarding house, being around women and her grandmother's friends all the time, it was instilled into her like the importance of essentially women supporting women. And the biography on her website says this upbringing taught her that women, quote, are the source of power, the heart of action, and the focal point of love, which I love.
So true.
Yeah. So that was her early life. And this is her foundation for just the awesome haiku. This is her foundation for this like amazing life that she's going to lead later. So so on to her like her education, which is also a huge part of like the rest of her life. Also, like I said, she's a professor, she was a teacher. She completed her undergrad education at Sweetbriar College, which is a small women's liberal arts college in Sweetbriar, Virginia. And I love a historical women's college. It's another little like connection. I almost went to one of those myself. And then I got roped into going to a private Christian university in Southern California, which is like the most not me thing ever. So after she got her bachelor's in drama and English, she went to Bowling Green State University in Kentucky for her master's in theater and public address, which I guess now we would call that like public speaking. Definitely something that came in handy in her future career. And so I feel like her Aries stellium, is that the correct term, stellium?
Yeah.
She has like all the, okay. Her Aries stellium and like her Leo Mars, like all of this like drama, like put me up for it. I'm going to say what I'm going to say. And but the also theater. I am like trained in it.
Right. Well, and the theater girl, that's funny.
Yeah, funny, I know.
Fun. Because the Aries, obviously I was a theater girly as well. The Aries moon I feel like is very theatrical, but also the Mars in Leo is a super like acting.
Oh, placement. Totally. Yeah.
My brother actually has a Leo Mars and he's
actor
as well. Yeah.
Wow. That's so wild. Yeah. It just all tracks. It all tracks.
And just what I was saying, everything in her chart being like in the Northern Hemisphere, or being like above the horizon line. Being a very public
expression
oriented person.
That's why I was like, you're on track, like you're saying the right things, because exactly, she was just very 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 expressive. Everything in her life was about, you know, for it seems like for most of her life anyway, and her later life, which we'll get to, is like kind of, I don't know, a little bit of the opposite, but still like most of her life was all about expression, about writing, about speaking, about performing and stuff. So and then also when we were talking about the chart, you said that like her Aries placements might be subdued, or there might be some like hidden parts of herself.
Well, which I was gay. Like
ding ding ding. Being gay in the 50s and 60s, being a gay woman in the 50s and 60s. And
also eighth house is the house of sexuality taboo sexual.
I was just gonna say that. So she, get this, she began her career working at Christian colleges in Texas teaching theater. And she was deeply closeted at this time, because obviously.
Do you know what colleges? Listeners, if you don't know, I am from Texas.
Yes, that is where I'm, that's why she's right there now. Right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to check in Texas. I almost wrote it down and then I didn't. Stephen F. Austin State University and Texas Lutheran College.
Stephen now, F. Texas Austin. Where is that one?
In,
whatever.
That's, I don't know how to say this. Nacogdoches. That's where that one is. And then the other one is in, Texas. S-E-G-U-I-N.
Seguin.
Okay, Texas. Anyway, so that's where she taught. That's where she taught in Texas. And yeah, Megan obviously O'Tips. She was there. That's the place. Obviously, deeply closeted at this time. And she apparently, while she was working at these schools, there were threats of blackmail and outing her. So she eventually moved on from there. and moved to Kansas, I think, for a short stint. I don't actually know how long, but there's not a lot of information about that. But she followed a lover to Kansas and then went on to San Francisco, which is where she really blossomed and came into her truest, most empowered self.
Wow, as you do a sign?
In San Francisco.
Maybe. Is this a sign for me? Maybe. Get out of the South and go to San Francisco?
Maybe, if you want to be like Sally. And she's a pretty cool person. So Sally came to San Francisco in the early 1970s, which was a really big, important time politically and socially in California, in the Bay Area,
the early 70s. Mm-hmm. That is like where of it was happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lots of activism in like every single space.
Man, like, I've been really connected to not only – we just talked about how I've been connected to San Francisco since wanting to move there, but it's been specifically San Francisco of that era. Like I've been thinking a lot about the musicians in like the early 70s and late 60s in San Francisco and that whole scene.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that she's not only connected to San Francisco but also that specific time.
That time, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, super cool. Yeah, there was a lot happening in this time. There was a lot changing, and the city was a hub for activism of all kinds. San Francisco was also probably one of the few places in the country at the time where it was more or less safe to like live and live openly as a queer person. So she was able to come out when she lived in San Francisco, and she became one of the first tenured lesbian professors at a public university in the country, if not the world.
Wow. So,
trailblazer. Yes, trailblazer in all the ways. So she started out as she was a tenured professor at San Francisco State University, which I also almost went to school there. There's a lot of places I almost went to school to. So she started at SFSU teaching speech and eventually ended up creating the first interdisciplinary women's studies program in the country, along with other faculty, including Nancy McDermott and Jane Gurko. Jane and Sally were actually in a relationship at one point, and it seems like Sally regarded this relationship as like one of the most significant in her life. More on that later. So yeah, first women's studies program in the country, which is now like it's turned into a whole department. Like it's a degree program. You can get your degree in women and gender studies. Mm-hmm. That's what it's called now. Sally taught courses like patriarchal rhetoric and rhetoric of sexual liberation. So
interesting. Very I want to cool. take those classes.
I know, right? You probably still can. And another like really cool thing about professors like in San Francisco specifically, like in this like just center for activism and all this change, is that a lot of them were like practicing activists too. Also very active in their communities alongside their full-time teaching jobs. So a lot on her plate. In addition to the council that she served on that I mentioned earlier, the Council on Religion and the Homosexual, I believe it was called, which helped form relationships between clergy and gay rights activists. She also, along with Harvey Milk, who I mentioned also, was the first openly gay man elected to public office in California and was tragically murdered by a fellow politician. Listen to that My Favorite Murder episode if you want to hear about that. But her and Harvey Milk fought against the Briggs Initiative, which was a proposition on the ballot in 1978 that would have banned homosexual people from working in schools in any capacity. So teaching, janitors, like everything. Yeah. Both she and Harvey Milk actually were at one point closeted gay teachers, like in public schools. So this was obviously like a cause to them that was very close to both of their hearts and really struck a personal chord with the two of them.
Yeah.
So they debated Briggs, this guy who brought up this proposition, I guess. I didn't look into him because I don't care. They debated him on television. They spoke together at rallies all over the state. She was a very effective debater having obviously been trained as a public speaker. And like I said, love to use the Bible in the ways that it actually was meant to be
Leo, Aries, Moon.
Exactly.
Leo,
exactly.
Mars, Aries, Moon. I don't want to cross her bad side.
She's combating, but then also I have something. Well, yeah, she was combating. And also, but also her with
Mercury. Her. What was her Mercury?
In Taurus. And, so, but then also with her Pisces Venus. She didn't do this, like, she was saying inflammatory things, but she was saying things, like, pointedly in a way to, like, get you to think about it and not necessarily, like, to, I feel like it's a very common thing, like, people who just say things not thinking about how the person is going to receive them necessarily, and, like, she, I don't know, she was very intentional about the ways that she, like, interacted with people to get them to think about why they should change their minds and not just like, well, why don't you think the same way as me, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And that Pisces Venus being from a place of like a desire for compassion and understanding, a desire for connection. So it like really softens. It's like she's not just fighting to fight. It's got this like deeper, greater purpose there.
Yeah,
yeah. Exactly. And that – that Taurus Mercury, that Taurus Mercury is like all of her fire is like attack, attack, attack. But then the Taurus Mercury grounds it and lets her have a delivery that just like hits really solid. Yeah, that makes sense. She was a great debater.
Yeah, exactly. And she liked to like stir things up. She liked to say controversial things in humorous ways. But she was great at connecting with people and championing her causes from a place of love and never violence or hate.
Yeah. So, okay, also Taurus Mercury, it was in her ninth house. So ninth house rules like professors and like public speaking.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So wow. Even more.
I love that. Just all makes sense. It all connects. So yeah, they debated this guy. Very successful in this campaign, like getting people to like not go for this proposition that was super terrible. So they were very successful in this campaign by empowering people who already shared their same values, but even changing the minds, as I said, she was very good at that as well, changing the minds of people who may have initially been on the other side. And so this proposition was never passed. And I wrote Big Slay.
Big Slay.
Big Slay. So, Deborah Craig, the director of the documentary on Sally that I mentioned earlier, says in the lecture that I watched that Sally is basically the lesbian Harvey Milk minus the recognition, as women so often fall between the cracks in history, especially women who are seen as radical. So
she's on brand for our coven.
Exactly. Exactly. So after Sally retired from teaching in the early 90s, she moved full-time onto her land that she owned outside of Willits, California, which is like directly west of where I'm from in California. But it's like I'm from like inland Northern California, and this was more on the coast. Almost, it was like way closer to the coast than I was. So, but like same amount of Northern. And one thing I have yet to mention about Dear Sally, who lived so many lives and had her hand in all the pots, is that she was also a writer and published author, which is something that you mentioned slash guess in your chart reading about her. So correct on that. And I think also just, I feel like Mercury in Taurus gives me writer vibes also.
Yeah, for sure. In the ninth house. I mean, ninth house is the house.
Yes. Yeah.
Publishing as well. It's like
professors.
It's like higher education. It's public speaking. It's podcasting. And it's publishing.
Wow, I wish Sally had a podcast. Give anything to listen to that woman speak. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I can't wait for this documentary to come out. We're going to have to like watch it together or something somehow, because like, she is just like, I'm so glad that I was able, like, obviously we've done a lot of like ancient or like older people from like times where we couldn't watch like.
Yeah. But this is the first one that's media, like super recent.
Modern times-ish. Yeah. But it was really cool to put like a voice and like face and mannerisms and actions behind this person that I was looking into. It made me feel a lot more connected to her. So Sally also is labeled as a lesbian separatist in her philosophies, probably because of these writings that she had published, including The Future, If There Is One, Is Female, which is, I believe, where we get that term, like, the future is female, which became really popular.
I have definitely heard of this book.
Yeah. And that, like, that term, it, like, is on t-shirts at Target and whatever, the future is female, during, like, the Me Too movement became, like, a really big thing. And
did that come when Hillary was running for president? Was that where that
kind of started? Yeah. That was, like, all around kind of the same time. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so people, I guess, like, lesbian separatism is, like, lightly controversial in some ways because, and people also, like, when I Googled her initially, said that she was a...
Sorry, maybe I'm a really terrible queer.
No, I didn't know what I was...
separatism.
No, I was about to get into that, and I should have said that before I went on my tangent. Lesbian separatism is basically just lesbians who are particularly interested in being in community only with other women. That's all that means.
Oh.
So they just want to be with girls all the time, which, like, valid.
Yeah.
And also, like, yeah, when I first looked her up, it said that she was, like, a eugenicist or whatever, like eugenics, which is bad. And it's because I think it's in The Future If There Is One Is Female. In that writing, she says something about, like, and I think it was just kind of a quip. She said in an interview I watched in the documentary clips that I saw, like, she's like, oh, I've gotten so much, like, flack over the years for saying, but so she said in The Future If There Is One Is Female, I believe, that, like, she thinks that men should only be, like, 10% of the world's population.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So people, like, have labeled her a eugenicist. Is that the right word? Yeah, whatever. But, like, someone who believes in eugenics because of that. Yeah. Like, and she was like, I didn't, like, actually mean it.
That's
but maybe kind of I did mean it a little bit.
Probably in her ideal world.
Yeah, and that's it, though, like, with all of this, like, these philosophies that she wrote, these books that she wrote, like, she even said herself that she lived a life of many contradictions for more reasons than just this, but, like, she did often keep company with men. Like, one of her, like, closest friends was Harvey Milk, and, like, had male friends, whatever. Like, it wasn't like she was, like, a staunch radical lesbian, like, only hung out with women, only interacted with women, and she wasn't, like, a man-hating, you know, how people love to,
but,
like,
but I definitely understand the whole, like, I hope that the world is entirely run by women and, like, fuck men, but then also not actually meaning that, you know, it's like, it's like, fuck men.
Because it's not realistic, obviously.
Well, and it's also, like, not fuck all men, but it's like fuck this archetype of the man that has been abusing power for so many years. That's what we really mean when we say fuck men. It's not fuck every individual man.
Not all men, not all men. Not all. My god.
I get her in that way.
Yeah. Oh, same. Absolutely. But it's, and that's the thing, is, like, she wrote these, like, political and social philosophies, but she also wrote a bunch of science fiction books that were about, like, all female utopias. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's really what it was about. So it was like, oh, I'm just dreaming of this world. Exactly. Also that. But, like, she's just dreaming of this world with all women. And, yeah, I'm like, wow, yeah, you're so right. It's just so gay. Like, yeah, of course she's going to only like women. Like, that's her whole thing. Oh, my God, that's so funny. But, yeah, I really want to read this one book that she has, like, literally, like, multiple science fiction books about all-female utopias and whatever. One most notably called Wanderground. And yeah, it's this feminist utopia inhabited by women with psychic powers living on the land. Mm. And Yeah. And so in the 70s, so this was before she like moved here, ended up moving here like full time in the 90s. In the 70s, she banded together with a bunch of other women and they bought a plot of land in the forests of Mendocino County to live on and operate together, almost like a real version, like real life version of the Hill Women and the Wanderground. So she got her like own little piece of this like dreamland yeah. that she wrote about. An article that I read by Ryan Cost, and it'll be linked below. I believe it was the San Francisco Chronicle that it was from, but I didn't write down where I got it from. So whoops. An article I read by Ryan Cost said that one woman who supposedly lived there described it as heaven, which I can totally see that. It sounds super slay. They built their own homes and they built fences like to keep animals out. They had a garden and they made like a spring for running water, like real true communal living.
Yeah.
And women's lands, so these were called like women's lands. This was like a thing like in the 60s and 70s where like women would just come together and live off the land and do things themselves. Like, we don't fucking need men. Like,
let's... Interesting.
Yeah, I know.
I don't but think it I've is ever like... heard of that before. I didn't know that was a I thing know. In the 70s. In that
it makes a lot of sense. Like, it does. And, like, that tracks. But yeah.
I'm,
yeah.
I'm not surprised, but I yeah. am surprised exactly. that I haven't heard more about it.
I know. I feel like this is, like, one of those things that, like, probably especially in, like, queer history, along with, like, people like Sally have just kind of, like, gone, like, kind of... drifted away and like yeah, we don't know a whole lot. I mean, queer history in general is like difficult to come by, like real sources and stuff, and like because obviously it just wasn't safe space to record things like that. But I feel like this yeah, I didn't know anything about these like women's lands either. So women's lands like this that operated as a space only for women were somewhat popular throughout this era of second wave feminism, like I said, like the 60s and 70s, though they weren't without controversy considering like the immense privilege it required to even be able to purchase land, to afford the supplies, to be able to live communally like this, build your own lodgings, etc. And they tended to be most popular and obviously because of all of those factors, like more accessible to white women. Yeah. And they were more kind of geared towards white women. I don't know if they were exclusionary, like purposefully by the people that lived on the lands, but obviously because of all of these factors, it just was easier for white women in like progressive parts of California, obviously, and like other places throughout the country, I'm sure too. But like, especially for this group of women, just easier for them to do this in this area, in this time and place. So it is lightly controversial, I would say, but I can see the merit in their intention in building this space for women.
Right.
So, so Deborah Craig, the director I've mentioned a couple times, asked in her lecture that I watched if Sally's mission and vision for queer people is still relevant. And she said something like, I don't know many queer people who would want to move out into the woods together and like live life out there. And to that I say, you definitely do not know the right queer people, because I feel like especially just like queer people I met in Nashville, I think of like my best friend who lives in Portland, who's also a queer woman, like a lot of the people I know would be definitely down for that. Like, I would be so down for that.
I feel like that's a very common, actually.
Yeah, like, especially desire. Now. Especially now. Like,
because the communal living and, like, raising kids together, but all just with your group of friends and your community.
Yeah, and just with your people who are safe to you. And, like, also no one can afford to buy a house by themselves anymore and, like, all of that. So maybe that's a regional thing. Maybe the city, San Francisco gays are not into that, but I can tell you the Southern gays very are into certain... that.
Well, I know that's a dream of my brother's, and he's an LA gay now, and I think he and a bunch of his friends definitely also want that. So
yeah, and I could see also like Sally grew up in a rural area. I grew up in a rural area. A lot of like my friends, like in Nashville, people that I knew when I lived there and stuff, like, grew up in, you know, not, like, super urban, like, happen in cities and stuff. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
it's, like,
true.
That's also kind of, like, partly, like, what we know.
Right.
In a way. And it wouldn't be, like, so, like, insane to be, like, yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm going to go, like, live in the forest with my friends and whatever.
Here's the other one.
Hi, Penny. I know I have the door shut, so my co-hosts are not joining me tonight, sadly. Just for the hint of drama, to honor Miss Sally's Leo Mars as well. Why not? So things on the woman's land were not always heaven. There was some trouble in paradise.
Of course.
Of course. I mean, you get that many women together. It doesn't even matter that they're all women. It's not like women mm-hmm. are more prone to drama, but just like mm-hmm. you get any group of people together mm-hmm. doing everything together all the time, there's going to be issues. So her ex, Jane, who I mentioned earlier that like helped, she was one of the people that helped start the women's studies program at San Francisco State University. So she was one of the people that lived on this women's land also. And she still lived on and helped her operate the women's land, but had become partners with someone else, a woman named Carol. And Sally herself had never wanted children, but Jane did. And Carol had two sons who Jane really loved. And Jane felt like there were maybe going to be issues with bringing Carol's sons to the land because it was a woman's land, a space for women. And there was a part of the clips that I saw from the documentary that was like an interview of Sally saying that like there was never a no boys allowed sentiment. And this is mm-hmm. a direct quote from that interview. She says, it actually doesn't mean no men or no boys. What it means is we want the land to continue to be owned and controlled by women. Mm-hmm. So that was the intention behind it.
Yeah. A matriarchal society rather mm-hmm. than no boys allowed.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, however, Carol's son has said that he was definitely initially not welcome there. He didn't feel mm-hmm. that way. And it was difficult for him at times growing up on that land, spending time there, because Sally may have truly believed at times that most men should be eradicated. Mm-hmm. So we don't know if she was necessarily always super kind and welcoming.
Yeah.
But she might have believed that, yeah.
That would be, I can imagine, as a boy being raised like a young boy, like that,
yeah.
That would be a difficult thing, especially if all of these women around you, a lot of them like are really angry yeah. towards men.
That's I don't know be... that they necessarily were, though. I don't know if they were angry. It was more about, like, the safe space for women.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's
but
a lot
just,
of...
just yeah. that time in that the second wave feminism, I feel, I mean, it makes sense to be angry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
know.
Totally.
Yeah. Maybe mm-hmm. maybe they weren't. Maybe they weren't angry. Maybe that's just what people...
Yeah.
But
I don't
like
know
if,
their day-to-day conversations.
I guess I just have
at,
an idea.
At the land.
I just have an idea of Sally in my head. And she's, mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it's because she's an Aries moon and an Aries sun, that I feel like mm-hmm. she would get really passionate about what she's saying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and yeah, yeah.
So for it sure. does come off as anger. And, like, for me as an Aries moon, I know when I get passionate about something, people are always like, whoa, like, chill. Like, why are you so upset? And I'm like, mm-hmm. no, it's just, this is what I think. So I could see,
yeah.
I could see it coming off as like
just like strong she, convictions, yeah.
Yeah, as like she hates men and she
yeah.
is angry at all men. And
yeah, and
yeah.
if you don't know her well enough to know that that's just like
yeah.
how she
especially
speaks or whatever, yeah.
If you're a kid growing up around mm-hmm. that and you're
yeah.
a boy and this woman
yeah,
is like,
sure.
I hate men,
yeah.
even though she doesn't
yeah.
say that.
Mm-hmm. There might
I can
be
imagine
some
that would be a bit
like
difficult.
Yeah, yeah. And so with that intention that I mentioned earlier, wanting the land to continue to be owned and controlled by women, which is what she said she wanted for the space that she created, controversially, Jane wanted Carol's sons to be her inheritors when she passed, and Jane owned a house on this land. So that would leave them a part of the land that she owned with Sally and other people. And when Jane did sadly pass in 2010, Carol's sons fought to claim the land that they had inherited. And it seemed like, from what I gathered from the information I got in that lecture, it seems like Sally was very unwavering in her principles for what the land was intended for. In part of the in part of the documentary trailer I saw, now one of her sons says, one of Carol's sons says that he wished he had not tried to fight for his stake of the land mm-hmm. that he was supposed to inherit. So maybe he's like, his eyes were opened a bit to like, okay, I see like what the intention was behind, mm-hmm. like why they wanted that. And it wasn't for him to take kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that is interesting. I was definitely, mm-hmm. yeah, I was definitely waiting for him, like hoping that he would say something like that as I watched it, because yeah. it's tricky because like Jane, their stepmother, I guess they're one of their maternal figures, wanted them to inherit that, but it goes directly against what Sally wanted, like
yeah.
her intention and the vision that she had for the this land that she created.
The mm-hmm. land. Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't sound like anything like it wasn't anything that she held against them, against these boys specifically. It wasn't anything against them for being like her ex-lover's stepchildren. Right. I think she was just a woman of very strong conviction, and this was a sacred project for her, something that she had been dreaming of and preserving for decades, because like all the things that she wrote and everything, like yeah. it's just her dream in a lot of ways. So
yeah.
So as the years passed, Sally ended up being the last one living on the land. She might have been a bit more accustomed to the demands of this kind of lifestyle. As I mentioned earlier, she had like her rural upbringing and might have been a little more like equipped and a little more confident in her skills as she aged to keep doing what she needed to do to keep up with this. So after her like bright, shining, outspoken, and groundbreaking career, where she was just a trailblazer in so many ways, she just kind of like disappeared quietly into the woods. Mm-hmm. So we're really lucky to know so much about her, because she did kind of fade in this time where media was becoming digitized and like more accessible and everything. Thanks to this documentary director, Deborah Craig, who I've mentioned a few times, like we're really lucky to have all this information about her, have firsthand accounts of the work that she did and the things that she believed. And Deborah Craig actually like also had just a really random, of course not random, but like a cool like cosmic way of finding her way to Sally. Like she didn't know about Sally explicitly. She was researching like aging lesbians for like a public health mm-hmm. Project that she was doing, or a documentary she was doing, and one of her friends was like, oh, I know this woman in her 80s who lives like in the middle of nowhere in Northern California, and she still cuts up her firewood with a chainsaw, like you have to meet her. And badass. So then yeah, and then it turned into like, oh, I have to make something about She was like, oh, I have to make something about like Sally and her life specifically, because like, mm-hmm. why do people not know about her? But yeah, I just think that like where she ended up is a really interesting, like full circle kind of moment for her. Like mm-hmm. she ended up in her later life back in a community of women in a small town in a rural area, like not unlike yeah. the women's boarding house that she grew up in. Mm-hmm. So she had this whole like insane transformational, like beautiful and like very expressive career just mm-hmm. like in the limelight a little bit, doing all this like stuff that had never been done before, and then she kind of like returned back to her roots to like mm-hmm. kind of settle in and stuff, and I think that's really interesting. Yeah,
I wonder how it's like thinking about her north node.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it is, so it's in Aries, so like the whole thing about mm-hmm. like finding her independence and finding her individuality, it sounds like she never had an issue with that though. It sounds like mm-hmm. she was always pretty like certain about who she was.
Yeah.
But it's in
I think the hardest part of that for her was maybe the time where she like was closeted and teaching in Texas, true. And when it's just like, God, I gotta get away from this. Well, this is not who I am.
Yeah, I was gonna say, because it's in her eighth house, so having that element, her north node in her eighth house of mm-hmm. like sexuality, it's like Aries in the eighth house north node, her lesson mm-hmm. is really like
mm-hmm.
uninhibited self-expression mm-hmm. and individuality yeah. and really learning to be her true self, sexuality mm-hmm. and all of the hidden yeah. parts of her out in the open yeah. and throw it out. And whoever resonates with it, great. If they don't, I don't care.
Yeah. And it was like she learned that lesson, and it feels like she kind of like completed that cycle in a way. She lived yeah. like a great life where she did like kind of like in a way like everything she was supposed to. Like yeah. she learned the lessons that she was meant to, and then she was able to spend like her last years just like writing and living her life. She has like a collection. I think it's called like, oh shit, what's it called? She has some like another like writing, like something she wrote, I think in the early 2000s, is like notes from a former activist or something like that, mm-hmm. where she wrote about like all like just her life and the things that she did and stuff, the things that she believed. And that would also mm-hmm. be a really interesting thing to read. So, but yeah, and she was just kind of able to like live her dream, this other like version of life that she like created for herself through like her writing, like yeah. her science fiction books. It was like her, the Wonderground like come to life. So I think that's really beautiful. She had like a, yeah, just a really interesting kind of like full circle life. Mm. Sadly, she passed away at the age of 90 in Ukiah, California on July 14th, 2021.
Wow.
And yeah, 90, long life. Which is pretty crazy. Apparently she also like just ate like goldfish and like smoked and like soda. Like she it's like kind of crazy that she lived to be that old. Yeah, apparently she was like just eat handfuls of goldfish. Like she wasn't like it's not like she was like this crazy crunchy health guru mm-hmm. or anything. Like
iconic.
She lived to be 90. Goldfish and she died goldfish of just and like
cigarettes.
I know. Honestly,
what
same.
A diet.
But yeah, so and she passed away just like of natural causes, like of old age. Like she never had like any sort of insane health issues. I just feel like that's kind of unheard of nowadays, mm-hmm. but so really interesting. But people who knew her
said
that she
is okay.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say the secret to living a long, healthy life is to have no men involved in
yeah, yeah. I was like, this could go a lot of different ways. Is to be gay and say what you feel. But people who knew her said she was fiery. She had a great sense of humor. She's described as being very charismatic. You just get wrapped up in her words. She was a visionary. She was someone who changed history as a major spokesperson for the gay community. Yeah, and there's a lovely quote written by her on her website in her biography that she wrote that I want to read. More and more frequently, I bless the people that others have called me enemy or unacceptable or crazy, for it is the presence of such people in my life that has whetted my hunger for diversity and led me to the knowledge that in the end, as in the beginning, love is the universal truth lying at the heart of all creation. Mm. Yeah.
So true.
So
also
sweet.
I just feel like every person that we've done so far, that is like their core philosophy, that love yeah. is the universal truth of all creation.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's like that. I feel like our core philosophy too, so that makes sense that these yeah. are the people we're finding
yeah that we feel drawn to. It's really cool. Yeah, it's just so heartwarming. It really yeah. is.
Welcome, yeah. Sally, into our coven.
Yes. Yeah. So one of the main reasons that we started this podcast was to highlight people that may be largely overlooked and unknown to the general population. And we wanted to use this platform to tell the stories of people who may have been left in the shadows a little bit or only have a bit of a cult following, you could say. And this podcast itself may only ever have a cult following too, but even just telling the story of someone who could inspire or encourage or just feel familiar and relevant how they do to us, to one person who didn't know them before, like that's where our heart really is with this. Mm-hmm. And I think Sally is a great representation of that. I had Absolutely. No idea who she was. Yeah, yeah, I did not know who she was before I heard her mentioned, yeah. like kind
I've
of
never,
in passing.
Never heard of this yeah. woman.
Yeah, and I just think she would love to know that her life and work are respected by a couple of queer witches who yeah. just want to spread the word about the cool shit that she did and all the things that she did to like set off ripple effects in the universe. Like all of the things that she did have had a lasting impact on so many different things, like, yeah, truly. And yeah, that is, I mean, why, just yeah,
the women in gender studies program, yeah, alone, that's, yeah, that's huge.
That is a normal, like, that's a normal major now.
Yeah.
Like, that is, exists at most colleges, like liberal, yeah, arts. Like, it's just like, it's not even something that I would,
yeah,
yeah, think.
And such,
of. Yeah,
such an important field of study too, that's still growing, yeah, so much. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. So that is why I've invited Dr. Sally Miller Gearhart to join our coven.
Oh, I thanks, love Sally. That. Thank you, welcome. Sally. Welcome. Okay, yeah. So what does our coven look like now? Our coven meeting, mm-hmm, room.
Yes, we have.
So we have Hypatia, who is, yes, she's telling us about the latest discoveries she's had with the stars, or maybe like giving us her latest idea philosophically. While Hildegard plays us a song this time.
Yeah.
And she gives us she shows us her latest piece of art that she's done. Mm-hmm. Then we have Isadora. I feel like we just have to start off the coven meetings with a movement session with Isadora, yeah, Duncan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then what do we have Sally doing? Is Sally gonna, she gonna give us a lecture?
Sally's gonna preach. Sally is gonna preach at the coven meeting.
She's gonna provide cigarettes and goldfish. Sally provides, yeah, refreshments and, yeah, the vibe. She provides a vibe.
Yeah, absolutely. She's probably in a heated discussion, mm-hmm, in a lovingly heated discussion with Hypatia in the corner.
Yeah,
currently.
Yeah, for, yeah, sure.
Yeah, they are talking about shit, but they're not heated towards each other. I think, yeah, they're just heated in general.
They're mad because they were both professors. So they're, mm-hmm, mad at the male-dominated industry of academia. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're talking about their hatred of men and how men are so weird. Like the whole tampon, yeah, throwing.
Honestly,
Hypatia's telling Sally about the tampon throwing situation.
Maybe Hypatia and Sally would fall in love.
Yeah, probably. They're too similar, it, though.
Yeah.
We'd need to look at their charts. You need to, yeah, compare charts. Wow.
They are pretty similar. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I love it. I love Sally. I'm so excited to, wow, watch her documentary.
Oh my god, me too. I cannot wait. But in the meantime, you can watch the lecture and get some clips of it if you're interested. It'll be in our show notes.
Yes.
And yeah, that's it for this week of Coven. Thank you for joining us on this
journey.
Thank
you. Don't forget to email, yes, us, covenpod333 yes, @gmail.com with questions.
We will read your magic moments.
Concerns, magic moments. Yes. Follow us on TikTok and Instagram, yes, @coven.pod.
Yeah. Thanks for being here.
Should I give a hint about mine?
Oh, yes. Give me your hint for next week.
I said that before thinking of it.
I was like, dang, Siri, I'm prepared. I wouldn't but have.
I do have my person. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say poet. Poetess. Okay. Poet.
I feel like we're going to end up covering a lot of poets. A lot of poets and writers.
Yeah.
Yeah. But inviting. Yeah. That's, but I love that. I'm excited. Yeah. Well, then now that I'm thinking, I'm like, I don't remember the hint that I gave about Sally, but
I think you gave a hint
about Sally.
I think you gave a hint about Sylvia Plath last week.
So
that's why I thought you were gonna do.
Ignore the hint that I gave last week, because that was a long time ago and I changed my mind. So.
But I love that we did Sally. Yeah.
Yeah. She was the right person. Yeah.
See y'all next week.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.